Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Eli James and William Fink here. We're expecting Pastor Ken Gregg to join us a little later as well. We're going to do today what we were unable to do last Saturday in Binghamton because of the anti-racist action group, otherwise known as commies. the Communists Against Freedom of Speech and American Legion Hall, which failed to stand up for the First Amendment rights of veterans, which I am one. And so we were unable to do our broadcast last Saturday on the Saul Paul issue. And so what we're going to do is we're going to start discussing that issue today. We're going to have an extended program, 2 or 3 hours. And then tomorrow at noon on Voice of Christian Israel, Greg Howard will give us his planned presentation for last Saturday as well. So between today and tomorrow, we will cover most of the material we had planned for last Saturday. So, Bill, we're going to start with your presentation, and maybe you can just give us a general outline of what you were going to talk about.
Well, it's basically, I did a program on this last month, and I tried to do a monologue and get the whole thing into 1.5-hour program, and it just didn't work.
Okay.
This is the identity passages in a letter of Paul. And,
okay.
And I took I made some changes to it for the Binghamton presentation and tried to shorten it up a little.
Uh-huh.
Basically, my opening is that even most Israel identity pastors and writers have an incomplete understanding of the Bible in context with history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They can talk about the ships of Tarshish. They talk about the so-called lost 10 tribes, which was really all 12.
Right.
And they understand, albeit sometimes vaguely, the connection between the Anglo-Saxons and the Celts with the Israelites of the Assyrian deportation.
Right.
And they have that surface knowledge, but even most identity pastors don't go beyond that.
Right.
And that's just the sad truth. It's
well,
true.
Yeah, let me just say here, because part of the problem is the British Israel teaching that the Jews comprise the tribe of Judah.
Right, and even only the English comprise of the lost tribe.
Right, right. The
and
English
all
are,
of them.
Yeah, the English are, in fact, Anglo-Saxons, as are the Germans, the Swedes, the Dutch, the Danes, basically all of your Celtic people, and the Judahites that merged with the so-called lost 10 tribes, which is really the Apollumi tribes, meaning the exiled tribes, which exile began in 745 B.C., many members, in fact, most of the house of Judah, namely Judah and Benjamin, were taken captive by Sennacherib and joined up with the lost 10 tribes. So, as you said, we have all 12 tribes represented among the Anglo-Saxon Israelites. Isn't that the case?
Right. In my classical records and German origins papers, I established fully that all of the Germanic tribes descended from the same Cimmerian and Scythian people of Asia.
Yes.
And that the Angles and Saxons, as British Israel incorrectly teaches, did not all move across the water to England.
Mm-hmm.
And that was World War I propaganda started by the Rothschilds.
Right.
And I think by the Jew Edward Hines.
Okay.
One of the early prominent British Israelite teachers, from all the best sources,
mm-hmm.
even from people in the Orange Street Church, tell me that he was a Jew.
Okay.
And that's probably where the false Judah is,
right.
The Jews and the Germans or Assyrians teachings came from.
Right. Now British Israel teaches that because the Germans were the enemy of Britain in 2 world wars, that they must be Assyrians or some sort of non-Israelites. But isn't it true that the Israelites fought amongst themselves numerous times in Old Testament times, so that was really nothing new?
Well, not only in Old Testament times, but I mean the Trojan War was an Israelite civil war.
Okay.
That they've been fighting against each other from almost the very beginning.
Right, right.
From the time the Benjaminites had stuck up for the sons of Belial, and it resulted in almost the whole tribe being lost.
Right, right, yeah. So intertribal warfare among the Israelites is nothing new. And
right.
Therefore, using that as an excuse to call the Germans non-Israelites is just plain bogus.
Yes, and that's really Jewish propaganda.
Yes.
It's propaganda from the city.
R.P. Wake asks, what about the French-English wars? I don't know how far back those go, but in my opinion, Napoleon wiped out the cream of the white race in France with his Napoleonic Wars. And my understanding is the average height of the average Frenchman was reduced by 1 foot.
A lot of that is actual Anglo propaganda against the French too, though.
Okay.
Yes, Napoleon took a lot of the chlorine out of the French gene pool.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt that he destroyed a lot of the good Saxon blood of the men of France. But if you want to see a true Frenchman, go to Quebec City.
Okay.
To Quebec. Go to Rivière-du-Loup. I've been to Rivière-du-Loup in Trois-Pistoles and all the way up. I'm talking about all the way up the St. Lawrence River. I've been there. And they're a true Frankish Frenchman all over the place. Up there.
Yeah, they're probably more Anglo-Frankish than the current population in France today. So we have a very strong French-Saxon presence in Canada, in Quebec, yes.
I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can't speak for France because I've never been there, but I have known people from France that were definitely Saxon people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But personally, I wouldn't doubt it one bit.
Right.
However, there is also a great Moorish and a great Jewish infiltration of the gene pool in France.
That's right.
But that's true in London, and it's certainly true in New York. So.
Yeah, right, exactly. And L.A. and San Francisco and Miami. I hate to say it, but Chicago, too.
Well, Adolf Hitler wrote about the Jewish merchants and the German nobles intermarrying all the time.
Right.
And we know they did it in England also. So.
Yes. Yeah. So certainly the upper class has intermarried with the Jews to a large extent. In the last 200 years, there's no doubt about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, but if I wanted to look for a real Frenchman, I would look in either northern Quebec, or even Quebec. I've been to Quebec 3-4 times, there are some strangers in the city, but it's still a good Germanic city.
Yes, yeah.
And I would look in the villages of northern France and Western France.
Yes, yes.
I wouldn't look in Paris for a Frenchman, just like I wouldn't look in New York City for an American.
That's right. That's right. Certainly not on the Lower East Side where all the Jews are.
Right.
Yes.
They're the minority. Real white people are definitely a minority in New York City, I'm sure real white people are a minority in Paris, and they're going to be in Toronto soon, or if they're not already, from what I've heard.
And as we discussed last night, no Jews at all are, in fact, Judahites. The vast majority of them there are, in fact, Khazars. And then going back into intertestamental times, they were the Edomites under Herod. So why don't the British Israelites understand this?
Now the French-English wars were mostly wars of the nobility.
Yes.
Just most of the wars of Europe were wars of the nobility.
Right.
English kings had rights by inheritance to French lands, and the French resisted that.
Yes.
And that went on for hundreds of years.
Yeah, yeah. And then no doubt there were some Jewish bankers bankrolling the war from behind the scenes.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Randy Gray, you're on the line. You have a question or comment?
I just want to say praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Thank you. Okay. Well, I'll just keep you on. If you have a comment, just feel free to join in, okay?
All right, thanks.
All right, Randy. So the question I asked was about the intertestamental period. Why don't the British Israelites understand that the Jews are, in fact, Edomites, not Judahites?
I think that money controlled theology much more than study.
Yeah, okay.
And that's true here, and it's true then.
Yeah.
It's no different.
Okay.
And if somebody is feeding you your funding, you're not going to investigate into their background.
That's right.
That's only that. You're not going to want to criticize them.
Mm-hmm.
And if Jewish banking institutions and Jewish banking families are feeding certain Christian pastors who happen to be the ones that get all the books published.
Right.
Who happen to be the ones with the most money for radio stations and to get the word out.
Yeah.
Well, that's, they're going to have the greatest appearance of authority to the general public.
Yes.
And it's just the natural outcome of the financial power behind them.
Yeah, and so any religion which does not teach that the Jews are in fact, Edomites, is on the plus side of the Rothschild scorecard.
Right, and yes. And it's definitely, it can be established as fact in the Old Testament, in the book of Malachi, in the book of Ezekiel, in the book of Daniel, in Susanna, in Jeremiah, in Jeremiah's tale of the, in his parable of the broken bottle, the
mm-hmm.
broken bottle city.
Yes.
And the good and the bad figs. And it's in the New Testament. It's all over the New Testament. The Jews are Edom.
Mm-hmm.
The disbelieving Judeans are Edom.
Right. Right.
Christ told them, you don't hear my voice because you're not my sheep. He didn't
That's right.
tell them that. You're not my sheep because you don't hear my voice. And that's what the church teaches.
Right.
And they teach his words backwards.
That's right. That's right.
And there's a huge difference between the two ideas.
What do they do with Matthew 13:15, where Yahshua says, I would not even try to convert you people.
Right. Any Christian who thinks he should convert a Jew
yeah.
is not operating under the principles laid out by Christ in the New Testament.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
To get on with my presentation,
yes, okay.
I'd like, my discussion of, the fact that most identity pastors are very weak in history. And,
okay.
and that's an unfortunate reality.
Yeah, and it's true. Yes.
And even the Assyrian deportations, in the understanding of who true Israel is, are only a very small part of the story of the dispersions of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Unless one can learn the entire picture of old world history, one is not ever going to properly understand the context of the New Testament,
right.
and especially the letters of Paul.
That's right.
Paul went to the Romans. He told them that they were Israelites. He went to the Corinthians, the Dorian Greeks, and he told them they were Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not. And I've heard identity pastors say that the Romans must have been Israelites of the Assyrian deportations. And mainstream historians would just laugh at that
right.
and walk all over, because it's common knowledge, and it's not just from mainstream history, it's from the inscriptions in the ancient books
mm-hmm.
that the Romans came from Troy
right.
and that Rome was founded 9 years before the Assyrians came into Palestine.
Right.
The traditional date of the founding of Rome is 750
right.
B.C.
Right. Well, and, now, I know the history of the Trojans, but 9 years before, is it not possible that some of the Israelites from Palestine / Judea had migrated to Rome to join up with?
Well, no. It was possible that there were probably a steady stream
mm-hmm.
of Israelites and other people
right.
out of Palestine all along.
Yes.
However, the Roman people themselves are clearly established in the colony that they called Alba Longa
mm-hmm.
from the 11th century B.C.
Right. So they are actually Israelites from the Egyptian captivity, not
yes.
from Palestine.
Yes. And Rome, the traditional date for the founding of Rome, I believe, would put it at 752 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, the people that founded that city had already been long established in the land. And that can pretty much be verified to be put in that area by
yes.
archaeology.
Yes, yes. And also the Greeks are Israelites from the Egyptian captivity, aren't they?
The Danann Greeks are.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dorian Greeks are not. They
okay.
are Israelites from the post-Mount Sinai period.
Okay.
Who came from Israel proper and moved the Danann Greeks, either subjected them or chased them out of the Peloponnese.
Okay, okay.
And I understand it. There are ancient testimonies that some of the Danann Greeks fled to the north of Greece, and I believe that's where the Macedonians came from.
Right, right. Now, at some point, I want to talk about the word adoption, because we're on the subject of the Roman Israelites, the Trojan Israelites, the Danann Israelites, etc., in contradistinction to the Assyrian captives who fled later. And but aren't we talking about in terms of the Egyptian captivity Israelites who fled from Egypt and founded various states, nation states around the Mediterranean basin? Wouldn't one of those be Carthage as well?
No, Carthage actually the traditional dates for the founding of Carthage, and the archaeology also goes pretty well with this.
Mm-hmm.
Josephus says that Tyre, the island city,
mm-hmm.
was built about 140 years, I believe he says, or 240 years before the temple.
Okay.
And Carthage was founded 150 years or so after the temple.
Okay.
The city of Carthage was a colony of Tyre.
Right.
Okay, and it was its foremost colony for a long time. Mm-hmm. However, it was also a very late Phoenician city amongst the colonizations of the Phoenicians.
Okay, so that came later. But let me just see if you agree with my assessment of which nations were founded by the Israelites of the Egyptian captivity, dating probably from 1500 B.C., perhaps a little earlier, down to probably, what, the Exodus was 1430 B.C., but it's somewhere in that vicinity. So probably earlier than 1500 B.C. down to the day of the Exodus, we had Israelites migrating from Egypt that founded Athens, correct?
No, I don't agree that Israelites founded Athens.
Okay. So
Athens is an Ionian city.
Okay.
For all of its history has been recognized as an Ionian city.
Okay.
And the Ionian Greeks are the same people that in the Persian inscriptions are called Yavanna.
Yavan, okay.
And they are the Javan.
Okay.
Or the Yavan of Genesis chapter 10.
And they are
Japhethites.
Japhethites, okay.
And that history goes hand in hand
mm-hmm.
with Paul's speech to the Ionian Greeks.
Okay.
Where he says, he doesn't talk to them about redemption.
Yes.
He doesn't talk to them about anything that is Israelite in nature.
Right.
He talks to them in Acts from the perspective that they are also children of Adam and sons of God.
Okay.
And he says, even some of your own poets have said
yes.
that we are the children of God.
Right.
And he's talking to them from an Adamic viewpoint.
Okay.
And he's not talking to them from an Israelite
okay,
viewpoint.
Okay, now which book is he talking to them in?
Acts chapter 17.
It's Acts. Okay, in the book of Acts.
The
okay.
book of Acts chapter 17, Paul's speech on Mars Hill is
uh-huh.
understood.
Okay.
He never talks about redemption or anything about Israel or the law because he's not talking to Israelites.
Right. Okay, so he's talking to Japhethites of Genesis chapter 10.
And once you understand that, you can understand Acts chapter 17.
Okay, now does he talk to them about so-called being grafted in? Or is that
no,
Rome?
Because
okay.
they can't be grafted into the covenant.
okay.
But even though they're Adamites,
right.
the covenant relationship is only with Israel.
Okay.
And the only
okay.
people he talks to about grafting in are the Romans, and that's because they came from Trojans of the pre-Exodus dispersion.
Right, okay. The pre-Exodus dispersion, which most of it came from Egypt. Okay.
And the pre-Exodus dispersion is also discussed by Diodorus Siculus in the last volume, in the
mm-hmm.
last book of his histories.
Okay.
I think it's like the 40th book of his histories. I don't have
yeah.
it handy, but it's quoted in my classical records in Trojan, Roman, Judah, I think, or in my classical records in the Dorian and Dan and Israelite Greeks.
Okay.
It's in one or the other where it, you know, Diodorus talks about these strangers being in Egypt
mm-hmm.
and they were driven out of Egypt. It's basically the Exodus story from an Egyptian perspective.
Right.
Once
right.
you understand it, you know,
exactly.
it's politically corrected for the Egyptian mind.
Yes.
and these strangers were driven out. And Diodorus Siculus, he's writing about 50 B.C., and he's quoting from a historian that wrote 300 years before him.
Yes.
I think Menander of Ephesus. I'm not positive, but I can't remember everything.
yeah, right.
And Diodorus specifically states that some of them had gone by sea and founded cities in Greece,
uh-huh.
prominent cities in Greece and elsewhere, he says.
Right.
And others had went with Moses and were led out into the desert by Moses.
Right. Okay. Sticking with the northern coast of Africa for a minute here, what about Alexandria and the Berber people? Because even today, the Berbers are considered as a Celtic people. And they would have found their origin in the Egyptian captivity as well.
Well, you know, I don't think that they came from the Egyptian captivity.
Okay.
I think that they are the Hamitic tribes of Africa, who were originally all white.
Yes.
Okay. And that they were mingled with later Phoenician settlers on the coast of northern Africa.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because Carthage wasn't the only Phoenician settlement on the coast of northern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
There were dozens of Phoenician cities all over the coast of northern Africa.
And for those who for first-time listeners to this message, those Phoenicians were actually Israelites, not non-Shemitic Aryans.
Right.
And the Israelites were, in fact, Aryans. Yes.
The first Phoenician colonies in the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. And when I say Phoenician, I mean the northern tribes of the Israelites.
Right, the ten tribes
okay?
house.
Yes. We're talking about basically about Asher, Gad,
Zebulun,
and
yes.
Naphtali.
Yes.
And there were probably other tribes mixed in with them.
Sure.
In fact, the first actually Dan settled in Greece, and you know Shardana is the word that gives the words that give us Sardinia.
Okay.
And Shar Dana means remnant of Dan.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Okay?
Very good.
So that's Dan.
Okay.
Now,
what about the Dardanelles?
Phoenicians, the first Phoenician colonies were on Crete.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Crete and Caria, which is the southwestern tip of Anatolia, the southwestern corner of Anatolia,
right.
were Phoenician. The first settlers in Caria were said by the Greeks to have come from Crete.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They have legends. Minos is called the Phoenician
yes.
in Greek writings, and Josephus calls him a Greek.
Okay.
Many of the Phoenicians were called Greeks.
Okay.
Other Phoenician colonies, and mainstream scholars deny this, but the ancient classics have it, were in Thessaly.
Right.
Okay, to the north of Ionia in Greece, to the north of Arcadia, to the, you know, of where Athens was.
Mm-hmm.
And around Cilicia and around the Troad.
Okay. All right.
And Miletus became the prominent Phoenician city of the Greek world.
Okay.
Eventually.
All right. So the Milesians would also be a post-Egyptian captivity, but not necessarily a Mosaic colony of Israelites.
Right. And another Phoenician city in Greece that was famous was called Thebes.
Okay. Thebes. All right.
And Thebes was, I mean, Euripides wrote a play, Phoenician women.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked all the time about how fair their skin was, how blonde
right.
their hair was.
Okay.
And he called them Phoenician women. It was the name of his play. And it was the same story that Aeschylus called Seven Against Thebes.
Okay.
And it was the story of a battle between the Arcadians and the Thebans.
Yes. Okay. So let's try to identify the Egyptian captivity, the pre-Exodus Israelite nations that were founded around the Mediterranean basin. Would that not include the Dardanelles and Troy and Iberia being Spain and Britain and Ireland? Wouldn't those all be settlements founded before the Exodus?
Well, was there they were founded by people who departed from the main body of Israel
exactly.
before the Exodus.
Yes.
But
yes.
that doesn't mean that the settlements themselves were
okay.
founded before you.
All right, so but they're focusing on the refugees from the Egyptian captivity, put it that way.
Okay. I know that they settled in Troy in the Troad.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they settled in Crete and in Thessaly and in the Peloponnese.
Yes.
And how far they spread at that early time is, I mean, Strabo mentions Minoan colonies in Italy.
Okay.
Did they make it to Britain at that early time? I can't say.
Okay.
Now, the legends, and I call them legends when I can't also show them in the Bible or archaeology.
Right. Okay.
Okay?
Fine.
Or actually show them in history books,
mm-hmm.
In ancient history books. But the legend of Britain goes back, I can only carry it as far back as Virgil. I can't take it back further. I mean, it might exist further than that. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't read the book yet myself.
Right.
Okay? And Virgil yeah. wrote about 20 B.C., maybe 30 B.C. in that period.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a huge anachronism
okay.
in the Aeneid. And
okay.
the Aeneid is the story of the Trojan prince who left with a great colony of Trojans after the fall of Troy
okay.
and settled in Alba Longa, which was the part of Italy immediately south of Etruria, where the Etruscans were settled.
Right.
And now, the Etruscans actually, by all ancient accounts, came from the Lydians of Anatolia.
Okay.
And the Lydians of Anatolia are the Lud of Genesis and under the descendants of Shem.
Okay.
There's two Luds in Genesis.
Yes.
One is under the descendants of Ham, and the other one's under the descendants of Shem.
Okay.
And it can be shown from Isaiah 66 and the prophecy about the deported Israelites that the Lud and Lydia are the descendants of Shem.
Okay. All right, now
they
what about
the Etruscans?
Okay, one more question on the Egyptian refugees. What about Darda and Calcol? Because they find, obviously the Dardanelles are named after Darda.
Right, they're both prominent sons of
Zerah.
Dara.
Right.
They're mentioned in 1 Kings chapter 4. They're mentioned in Chronicles.
Okay.
And these Darda is the legendary founder of Troy.
Okay.
I worked out a chronology. I don't have it handy. It's in my notes that I haven't unpacked yet. That actually does show that it's extremely plausible that the Darda from the Greek records is definitely the Darda from the Hebrew records.
Right.
But it can be demonstrated chronologically that they both lived in the same time period.
Okay. And what about Calcol?
Let me say that there are all kinds of evidence from the Greek records that the Trojans, that Darda and his Trojans were indeed Hebrews.
Yes.
In fact, one of their gods were called the Kabiri.
Okay. Right.
And Kabiri is a Hebrew word.
Right.
So it's not just the similarity of the single name.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of other evidence also.
Right.
Now
and
actually Athena was a Trojan goddess also.
Okay.
And Athena, if you understand that Hebrew was written sometimes left to right and sometimes right to left,
yes,
that a lot of times words got reversed.
Yes.
Athena is the Anath of Phoenicia.
Okay.
The goddess Anath.
Oh, I see.
And they have the same traits.
Okay.
They're both war goddesses. They're both virgins. They have the same traits.
Okay, so the letters are transposed, Anath and Athens.
Well,
and
Anath and Athena.
Okay, interesting. Okay. All right, so we have clear historical evidence that many
Let me just say yes about Calcol. Calcol is the legendary founder of the region of Pamphylia.
Pamphylia, okay.
Yes, Pamphylia actually means all tribes in Greek.
Huh.
And Calcol was the legendary founder of the first colonies they considered to be Greek.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. All right, so we have I think what we have here is that all of the major ancient nations in the Mediterranean basin were founded either by Israelites directly or some other Hebrew tribe, right?
Right. And okay. Strabo talks about how the Cilicians, which were Phoenicians, the Carians, who were Phoenicians, they always took their kings from the Trojan princes.
Right.
So they were Judah's Arab.
Yes, right.
And of course, out.
And, of course, the British kings, they claim to have descended from the Trojans as well.
Yes, I can't prove the British story that Virgil elucidates about Trojans going to Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't prove that from history.
Okay.
Except by Virgil's mention of it.
Right.
And by one, I don't want to call it coincidental.
Okay.
But there's a tribe in Britain called Trinovantes,
okay,
by Caesar, and that seems to mean that they were new Trojans. I mean, a lot of British scholars actually make that assertion, and it seems to be plausible. But I don't stick my neck out and say it's definite,
right?
A definite identification. Mm-hmm. However, I would say that E. O. Gordon, in his book Prehistoric London, wrote probably the best work on the thesis.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and the original name of London was Caer Troy, which means New Troy.
Well, I haven't seen that in records yet.
Yeah,
I've seen it in identity books, but I haven't personally seen it in records. It's not in Caesar.
Okay.
Identity writers have asserted that it's in Caesar. I've read all of Caesar's extant works. I've read the Gallic Wars and all his other books.
I believe Waddell makes that statement as well.
Waddell also has a lot of evidence about the Phoenician origin of the Britons, Scots, and Anglo-Saxons,
right.
And I've read that work, that book. I have it here somewhere.
Okay.
However, I haven't I have not personally seen in an ancient book that London was ever called Caertroia.
Okay.
I would like to believe it, but I haven't seen it.
Okay. All right. So now what other pre-New Testament history and migration knowledge do we need to cover before we really get into Paul?
Well, I mean, the Danaan Greeks controlled the Peloponnesus, and there's a story about the Heraclidae and two generations after the Trojan War, how Heracles was ejected
yes.
from the Peloponnese by the Danaans. I'm sorry, the sons of Heracles.
Okay.
And they went, and by sea, they came back with the Dorians.
Okay.
And the Dorians conquered the Peloponnese from the Danaans.
Okay.
Now, if you understand that the Dorians are placed by Homer on Crete.
Yes.
He never places them. He never mentions them outside. Now, Homer's writing about 600 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
He understands the older history of his nation.
Right.
And he understands that the Dorians are on Crete, but he mentions them nowhere else.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. And that mention, I believe, is probably found in the Odyssey and not in the Iliad.
Okay.
Now, the Heracles means it's actually – it may be the personification, that word, of a group of people, because the word can mean in Hebrew, the traitors.
The traitors?
The, ha, or ha, is the article.
Okay.
Heracles means traitors.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay? And maybe, and I'm saying that perhaps the legend is representative of a group of traitors who came from the Levant, who came from ancient Israel.
Right.
Because all of the earliest legends of Heracles and of Dionysus are in Palestine.
Okay.
The earliest legend of Heracles is when he saves Andromeda from the sea monster.
Right.
And it's said by all parties, Greek and by Josephus, by the Hebrews, to have happened at Joppa.
Yes. Okay. So so it's for people who might misunderstand, we're talking traders as in merchants, not traders as in political.
Well, right, traders as in merchants.
Yes.
And the Phoenicians were famous. I mean, they were famous.
Yes, well, they were the world's most famous merchants of the day, absolutely. Yes.
And there were probably some Canaanites behind that.
Yes.
But the Phoenicians, I believe, were the most famous merchants because they were the greatest sea power.
That's right.
They had the greatest sailing ability, and their sea power was legendary, and their ability as sailors was legendary all throughout Greek history.
Okay, now... Now,
to understand the Heraclidae, or the sons of Heracles, brought the Dorians into the Peloponnese. They conquered the Danaans.
Mm-hmm.
The two principal Dorian cities were Corinth
and
Sparta.
Okay.
Okay, the two largest Dorian cities of the Peloponnese.
Okay, and now, that would be on the western end of Asia Minor, right?
No, the Peloponnese is that... It's almost an island.
Oh, okay.
Just below mainland Greece.
Just below
mainland
Greece.
If you look at the map of Europe.
Okay, okay.
The western end of Asia Minor is actually Caria, and later a lot of that became Ionia when the Athenians had actually crossed the Aegean Sea and conquered a lot of it.
Okay, but the reason I asked that is because a lot of the cities to which Paul addresses his epistles are located in the western Asia Minor there. You know, just the Mediterranean coast or not too far inland.
Well, right, but Corinth was a great city in the north of the Peloponnese that was right on the isthmus, the very thin, narrow strip of land that connected the Peloponnese to the mainland.
Okay, okay.
And Corinth pretty much controlled that isthmus.
Okay, so what we have here is a conglomeration of Israelites, Shemites, Hebrews, and Japhethites, that all settled in this Mediterranean basin area. Isn't that what all these people are? In fact, Adamites and none other.
Absolutely.
Okay, okay. Now which Asia Minor cities are actually peopled by Israelites now of the Mosaic period?
I would say that by this time, you see, the Cimmerians had destroyed the Phrygians.
Okay.
And the Persians destroyed the Lydians.
Okay.
Lydia was reduced... Under the time of Croesus, just as Persia was conquering Asia Minor, Croesus had actually had resisted the Persians and they destroyed the five major cities of the Lydians.
Okay.
And I mean, there were always some Lydians there, but there's Shemites too.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically, after the Persian wars with the Greeks and the Greek victories, most of those Lydian and Phrygian cities had become colonized by Greeks and were Greek in nature.
Okay.
You have to understand that the want for arable farmland
mm-hmm.
is very, very dire.
Yeah.
Because Greece itself, the population is booming, and the only thing that keeps that in check is all the wars they have amongst each other.
Right, exactly.
But they're constantly on the prowl
mm-hmm.
for arable land.
Right, right.
Farmland.
Yeah, and that area of the world, Greece, Italy, it's very mountainous and it's very rugged, so they don't have vast plains of farmland like we do here in America. So there was always fighting over that land, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the major cities of Western Anatolia are either Phoenician
mm-hmm.
or Greek, Dorian or Ionian Greek.
Okay.
Or Trojan, because there were still a lot of Trojans in the northeast in the Troad.
Yes.
I mean, they didn't all leave the Troad.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the Illyrians were actually the second largest branch of the descendants of the Zerajudahites of the fall of Troy.
Yes.
And Paul brought the message, as he says in Romans chapter 15, as far as the Illyrians.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they would be, ancient. The ancients understood that the Illyrians were Dardanians and were related to the Trojans.
Uh-huh.
There's no doubt that the ancients historians didn't understand that.
Right. Okay. All right. So we have this population of Israelites, Shemites, and Japhethites booming around the Mediterranean basin, and many of these nations began to form before the Exodus. Now let's talk about some of the post-Exodus nations or city-states. It probably is better to put it that way, city-states. And what might those be?
Well, Carthage and Iberia are post-Exodus.
Okay, Iberia being Spain.
Yes, and actually the first colonists, Marseille was actually colonized by Ionian Greeks.
Okay.
And the Ionian Greeks also had colonies further west of that.
Okay.
They were the Phocians primarily.
Okay.
The Phocians founded Marseille.
How do you spell that, Phocian?
Well, it would be P-H-O. It's usually spelled by English scholars, P-H-O-C-I-A-N-S.
Phocian. Okay.
They were Ionian Greeks from a city in Anatolia, actually, called Phocis.
Okay. Okay.
However, Iberia itself, the Iberians or the Hebrews
yes.
of Iberia of Spain, if I can call the peninsula Spain, it's
yes.
pretty much an anachronism at
right.
the time.
Right.
But they are Hebrews which came later.
Yes. Okay.
From the time of Solomon's ships of Tarshish.
Right. Right. So it's post Exodus, post Sinai.
Yes, and
yes.
Tarshish is the Tartessus of Tartessia in Spain is the Tarshish of Solomon's ships
yes.
and
okay.
the Tarshish of Genesis chapter 10, and the first inhabitants of southeastern Spain would be Japhethites.
Okay. What about the Gauls of France?
Okay. The Gauls of France, and I only have a theory on this.
Okay.
I don't have a practical history that I could show you.
Okay.
Okay. That the original people called Gauls were probably Phoenicians and or Japhethites who had settled the river valleys and the coasts of France.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
I can't prove that.
They're still our people, though. Yes.
Oh, yes. It's mm-hmm. it's indubitable.
Mm-hmm.
We have a history. I mean, I understand all of the archaeology, the Bell Beaker
yes.
people, and all of the prehistoric peoples of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
However, we have writing comes only through the Hebrews.
Right.
Okay. And
right.
and the Babylonians and the Shemites, you know, they wrote in cuneiform.
Right.
But alphabetic writing and the transmission of history as we know it
mm-hmm.
comes only through those people that descended from the Hebrews.
Right. And that includes the Greeks
which includes the Greeks and
yes.
most of the Greeks and the Romans.
Right.
So,
right.
Okay. But
so
we
it's
have
Hebrew.
A
it's Hebrew culture.
Presence in Western Europe.
Yes. Right, and this is what I want to point out to people. It is, in fact, Hebrew culture, but the so-called Western scholarship of the world does not want to admit that it's all Hebrew culture.
Right, absolutely.
Yes.
And the Greeks admit that the Phoenicians brought writing and letters to Greece.
That's right. Okay, and they were Israelites.
Right, absolutely.
Not non-Shemitic Aryans.
Right, the Ionians, in other words, the Ionians, and the there's another people in Greece that I'm sure descended from Adamites that were not Israelites,
mm-hmm.
and they were called originally Pelagians.
Okay.
And they may have been Hebrews from Peleg.
Right. Okay, well, the reason I ask about the Gauls is because one of the epistles of Paul is written to the Galatians.
Well, those Galatians, okay, the word Gaul is a very complex word.
Okay.
It's not an easy thing to understand.
Okay.
There were people in France that the Romans called Gauls.
Okay.
Okay. In the 6th and 7th centuries B.C., the Greeks called the tribes who were invading Europe from the east,
mm-hmm.
from Asia, they called them Kimmeroi.
Yes.
Now, they called them that, and I make this proof in my Classical Records in German Origins, Part 1.
Okay.
The Kimmeroi are called that by the Greeks because the lingua franca at the time was Akkadian.
Mm-hmm.
The common diplomatic
right.
language of trade and diplomacy was Akkadian.
Okay.
Because Assyria ruled in Mesopotamia.
Yes.
Okay. Until 612 BC when the Medes and the Scythians destroyed it.
Right.
Now,
right.
if the lingua franca was Akkadian, the Greeks would have learned the Akkadian name for these people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cymru.
Right. Cymru, which is
Kimmeroy.
What the Welsh still call themselves Cymru.
They were the Kimmeroi
right,
of
right.
the Greeks.
That's right.
Okay?
And there is
Kimmeroi is the Hellenization
yes.
of the Cymru
right.
of the Assyrians.
And that goes back to the name of Gomri, which is the original Hebrew for Omri, King Omri
right.
of the Israelites.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Now, later on, the Greeks call these people Scythians.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that is from the Hebrew word Sukkot.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the people's name for themselves.
Yes. Well,
okay.
doesn't that mean tent dweller? Isn't
well, Hosea says, I will make thee to dwell in tents.
Right. Okay. So they called themselves Sake or Sukkah, and that became a, and then what about Isaac? Because,
well, let me go.
Okay.
I'm not going to go back as far as Isaac because I can't prove that connection.
Okay.
Okay. I can say that the Persians
yes.
made their inscriptions trilingual or bilingual.
Right.
In Elamite and in Akkadian.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever you see in Akkadian inscriptions the word Cymru,
mm-hmm.
in the Persian inscription side of the inscription, you see the word Saka.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
All right.
And that was the Persian name, which a lot of people derive from Isaac, and I'm not doubting it,
yes.
but I can't prove the connection.
Okay.
I'm not
right.
going to try to prove something that I don't have archaeology
right.
to do so with.
But it would fulfill Genesis 21:12, which says, "In Isaac shall thy seed be called."
Well, yes, that's true, and Paul repeats that in Romans.
Yes, right.
Now,
okay.
so there's clear archaeology
okay.
and clear history that connects the Scythians, the Saka, the Sakans, they were also called by the Greeks,
mm-hmm.
and the Kimmeroi
yes.
and the Cymru, they're all the same people.
Yes, yes.
Now, for some reason, and I don't know why, okay, after the 5th century B.C., the Greeks also started calling these people Galatahi.
Okay.
G-A-L-A-T-A-E is the way that scholars
yes.
in English usually transcribe it.
Right.
Galatahi, that's the word that gives us Galatians.
Yes.
But the Greeks applied Galatahi to all of the Scythians who had made their way into Europe.
Okay.
Now, the ones that were in Asia, they still called Scythians.
Okay.
But the ones that lived to the north of the Danube, they started calling them Galatahi for some reason.
Okay.
And they applied the name Galatahi to those Scythians as far west as France.
Okay.
And some of them had migrated, and the Romans called those same people Gauls.
Okay.
Now, whether or not the Romans applied that word Gaul to the original pre Scythian people in France can be disputed.
Right.
Because Roman writing doesn't go back that far.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
Okay. Roman records, we don't have actual Roman books that exist. We might have guys like Livy and other historians like Pliny that wrote and copied from books that were much older than their own.
Right.
However, those actual writers are only from the first century BC.
Okay. All right. Very good. So are there any other peoples of the Mediterranean basin, the Caucasus? But maybe we should talk a little bit about the Parthians and others points east of Palestine as well before we get into the actual epistles of Paul.
Well, in the Caucasus Mountains, after the deportations of the Israelites, we have the appearance of the Scythians in the north,
right?
The Cymri in the north of Media, and the first nations that they found are Armenia, which is a Hebrew word. Ar means mountain, and mini means a portion or a part.
Okay.
So Armenia would mean the mountain region.
Okay.
That's what it would mean.
Right.
Now, we also have, just north of that, actually straddling the Caucasus, we have a land called Iberia.
Yes.
Okay? And it's the same exact word, and Strabo wondered at this,
okay,
that was used of the land in Spain.
Spanish Peninsula, yes.
And the only way that could possibly be is if both people were Hebrews.
That's right. That's right.
There's no other viable explanation.
Yes, yes. Okay, no, it's just a coincidence, Bill. that's secular history. It's just a coincidence. So how did these coincidental people become known as Caucasians?
Well, that was the work of 17th and 18th century European anthropologists who understood that the white people came from Mesopotamia through the Caucasus Mountains.
Yes. But they didn't understand that the Israelites did.
Well,
that they didn't know.
Right, that they didn't know.
Yes.
They didn't put together the history, and they didn't have the benefit of the archaeology that we have today.
That's right. That's
even though the Jews and all of academia denies this archaeology.
Exactly. Because it proves that we're Israelites. Yes, of course they deny it.
It proves that the core of the Germanic people of the world are the children of Israel.
But Bill, what amazes me is that I remember in grade school and high school and to some extent in college reading Hicks history books about the Caucasian people and stating very plainly that the Caucasian people originated from the Caucasus Mountains around 800, 700 BC, right? And no one ever went to the other side of the Caucasian Mountains to see who those people might have been?
Well, absolutely, but that's because that it's pounded into because scholarship comes to us through the Jews, through Jewish, all these foundations that they've taken over academia, the Aryans came from the north.
Right.
And I've even heard it stated that the Syrians the Assyrians and the Persians are actually Aryan invaders from the north that adopted Semitic languages.
Okay.
Because they can't get around the fact that they're white.
That's right. Okay. So they got it backwards. The Aryans actually came from Mesopotamia, and they migrated north. That's the reality.
They all came from Mesopotamia.
Yes. Okay. And that includes the Parthians, who were of Pharez. They were Judahites.
Well, Josephus identifies the Parthians as some of the lost Israelites.
Right.
I mean, in the preface to his book, Wars of the Judeans, if you read that carefully, there's no doubt that he is calling the Parthians Israelites and the northern barbarians Israelites.
And
besides that, in the Book of Wars, it's Wars of the Judeans, and I forget where it is. It might be around the fourth book. He makes a giant departure and starts talking about a war that the Alans had.
Okay.
Now, why would he care about the Alans?
Right, right.
But they're the northern barbarians who are amongst those dispersed of Israel.
Right, right. Okay. And so, and it's understood by most historians, but again, it's blacked out. The nation of Parthia has been blacked out of the history books, just as Khazaria has been blacked out of the history books. But it wouldn't it be correct to say then that the wars between the Parthians and the Romans were, again, intertribal wars.
Well, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But what's more important,
yeah,
is that, and very few people realize this.
Okay.
At the time of Christ, the whole world was under the control of the Scythians in the north,
mm-hmm,
the Parthians, who are actually Scythians,
right,
in the east.
Yes.
And when I say the world, I mean the known civilized
world. The civilized world.
And the Romans in the west.
Yes.
They were all Israelites.
They were all Israelites. Yes. Absolutely. And nobody seems to know this. Okay, but Paul knew it, didn't he?
Paul absolutely knew it.
Okay, now let's get into Paul. I think we've set the scene. It's taken us an hour, but this is very important history that you can't understand the epistles of Paul unless you know who he's talking to. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely, and that's the whole point of the opening of my presentation.
Yes.
When Yahshua Christ chose his apostles, it is fully evident that he had chosen men who are clearly familiar with the scriptures and having at least an average literacy for the period,
yes,
were unlearned in the arts of rhetoric and the letters and the higher learning of the Greeks.
Right.
They didn't know any of that stuff.
Right.
It is not that these men were unintelligent,
mm-hmm,
but rather they were only simple, plain tradesmen who evidently had no desire or no means to afford such learning.
Yes.
And
right,
this is in the ancient world. You know, the Greek word skole is the word that we get school from.
Okay.
And it means leisure.
Okay.
In other words,
yes,
higher learning,
yes,
was the vocation of the people
who
could
time
afford the leisure time.
Yes, right.
Who had the time for it. I mean, you have to actually be able to take off and read and,
right,
and debate philosophy. And most working,
yes,
people can't do that.
Right. Today, people who have leisure time watch television. No wonder
well, right,
we don't know anything.
And the only reason why I was able to do the reading I have is because the government gave me 12
years.
Yes,
they gave me plenty of leisure time, right? Okay. All right. So let's get into some of Paul's writings to verify that, number one.
Well, that's a contrast I would like to make first is,
okay,
Paul with these other apostles.
Okay.
Because of the original apostles that Christ chose, we have 6 surviving epistles. Now, all these epistles are written to people in Anatolia,
okay,
and the Near East.
Right.
2 of the 6 epistles are only short personal notes from John.
Okay.
So that leaves us with 4 epistles.
Mm-hmm.
And while, of course, the short personal notes from John are exemplary, they don't qualify as being instructional.
Right. Okay.
Now, even though the Near East at this time, and at the time of Christ, was as European in nature as Europe was,
mm-hmm,
and there is very little in any of those epistles by which one can make a positive and direct historic connection between the Greeks, the Romans, or the Scythians, and the Israelites of the covenants of God.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be made in those epistles.
Yes.
James writes to the 12 tribes of the dispersion, but he doesn't tell you who they are.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
Peter writes to people in the cities that Paul taught in.
Okay.
In the cities of Asia Minor.
Yes.
But he doesn't come out and explicitly say,
right,
that those people are Israelites.
Yes.
So,
yes,
the only connection we have in the New Testament, outside of what we know and can show from history books and archaeology,
right,
is Paul.
Yes. Okay.
Now, in contrast to these original apostles, Paul was a man who was not only schooled in Judaism,
mm-hmm,
as he admits in the New Testament,
right,
but he was also learned in rhetoric and in the classical poetry and the histories of the Romans,
okay,
and the Greeks. In his letters, he quotes Aratus, Epimenides, Menander, and Euripides.
Okay.
And I have those quotes verbatim.
Okay.
All right? He,
yes,
paraphrases and alludes to Xenophon and to Homer.
Mm-hmm.
He draws illustrations from Homer.
Okay.
In fact, I'm personally convinced,
yes,
that his grafting in of the olive tree is a direct illustration that he got from Homer.
Therefore, he's a universalist, right?
Yeah, right. well, it's the Homer actually has a line in the Odyssey about Odysseus falling asleep in the dark and waking up in a place where wild olives and cultivated olives grew from the same place.
Uh-huh.
Grew in the same place, and that just struck me as where Paul got.
That's right. That's where
I'm
he got
sure
the simile. Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's you know that if the hand is only a part of the body, it's still you know, and
yes.
It's not as important as the eye. It's still a part. You know that whole illustration he makes
in
Corinthians?
Well, vaguely, yeah.
And 1 Corinthians 12.
Okay.
You know, he's trying to say that every part of the body is an important part of the body.
Right.
Because it's needed by the body.
Yes.
Well, that is found in Xenophon.
Okay.
That's saying, and it's applied differently in Xenophon. And it's also found in Livy.
Mm-hmm.
And I could give you the chapter and the verses if I took the time to look it up.
Yeah, okay.
I'll give it anybody
yeah.
that wants to email me. I'll give them the chapters and verses from Livy.
Right. Okay, so this would be why Peter said of Paul that his speech is difficult to understand.
Well, right. He was very learned
mm-hmm.
and writing to common people.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Paul clearly had a good knowledge of history, as it was known at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the skills and the learning necessary in order to speak to Judeans on the terms that they understood,
yes.
but also to the non-Judeans or the pagan world on the terms that they understood.
Right, exactly.
The other apostles couldn't do that. Peter
That's right.
couldn't do that. John couldn't do
right.
that.
Yeah, because he was a Roman citizen raised in Tarsus, which was a very cosmopolitan city, but he was also a Benjamite.
Tarsus was esteemed by Strabo to be maybe one of the top three cities of Greek learning.
Mm-hmm.
It was written very highly of by Strabo.
Right.
And I've quoted that in some of my writing, that mm-hmm. passage from Strabo. Tarsus was, it was like
yeah.
Chicago's called the second city.
Right.
Well, you know, it, as compared to New York, don't
yes.
ask me why.
Right.
yeah, Tarsus is,
yes.
is illustrated in very much the same way.
Yes. Okay. So this is why Paul's speech, now, because some of the anti-Paul crowd would like to say that when he speaks to Judeans as a Judean and to non-Judeans as a non-Judean, they make that phrase out that he's admitting to be a hypocrite.
Well, and in truth, he's admitting to having been learned in
right.
Judaism, that he could speak to them on their terms.
Right.
And being learned in all of the pagan learning.
Yes.
He can speak to them on their terms.
Yes.
He can recite the Greek poets and what they say about the origins of people and explain to these pagans that they're the children of Israel.
Yes. Okay. All right. Okay. So do you want to start tackling some of Paul's epistles at this point? Or do you have more introductory material here?
Well, I actually do.
Okay.
Examining the Greek of Paul's epistles, we see that at every turn, Paul in one way or another related the revelation that the people whom he was addressing were indeed dispersed Israelites.
Okay.
Yet it must be understood that the epistles alone are not Paul's gospel.
Okay.
I believe that the gospel that Luke wrote, that's Paul's gospel.
I see.
Oh, okay, because
okay.
Luke was Paul's constant companion.
Right.
So when he says my gospel, you have to read Luke to understand that.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Okay?
Interesting.
And neither of those epistles are a record of his fundamental teachings,
mm-hmm.
with perhaps the exception of the epistle to the Romans.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Rather, these epistles are a fortification of things he already taught to these assemblies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That he'd already been to all these assemblies when he wrote them, except to the Romans. Okay, so
okay.
the Romans is much more fundamental in its nature, that epistle.
Okay.
And often his other epistles are only responses from letters he had gotten from the people of those assemblies.
Yes, okay, so in other words, so generally speaking, when you write a letter to somebody, it's usually addressed to a particular group of people, and it's not addressed to the entire world.
And it's in a particular context.
Yes, in a particular context. So understanding the context and the people to whom the epistle is written, you must take that into consideration and not generalize or universalize beyond that fact, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And before we get the epistles, there's one more thing I'd like to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Zechariah the prophet at 12:7 in the book of Zechariah says that Yahweh shall save the tents of Judah first.
Okay.
And Yahshua Christ is attributed by John in his gospel at 4:22 as having said that salvation is from among the Judeans.
Okay. Yes. Right.
This is important to understand in the context with the dissemination of the gospel.
Uh-huh.
Since it is through the assembly halls of the Judeans.
Yes.
Which were by Yahshua's time spread throughout the Roman world.
Okay.
That the gospel was to be delivered to lost Israel.
Yes. Okay.
These assembly halls, as it is fully evident in the Acts, were commonly attended by both Judeans and Greeks or Romans or Celts, depending upon the location of the assembly hall.
Okay.
And this is very clear throughout the Book of Acts.
All right.
That there's always people from that were Greek people sitting in on these assemblies. There was a somewhat closer relationship between dispersed Israel and the scriptures than the Jews and their followers of today would want us to believe.
Yes. In fact,
and it can be demonstrated that even many of the Greek philosophers, and most famous of all was Pythagoras, actually studied and derived their philosophy, at least in part, from the Hebrew scriptures.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and Pythagoras definitely studied in Egypt. In fact, he attributes most of his mathematical knowledge to having studied in Egypt.
Well, right, but he also studied the Hebrew scriptures, and his theories on the afterlife and what he taught about that are exactly like the Hebrew.
Okay, all right.
And, as Strabo attests, they're exactly like the beliefs of the Galatahi, or the Galatians, the German tribes, basically, is what he means by that.
Right, right. Okay, so... So where do we go from here? I think it's very clear now that Paul knows his people. Before we go into one of his epistles, did these Greeks, Romans, and others understand that they were Israelites? Obviously, Paul understood they were. Did these synagogues, these congregations, understand they were Israelites to some extent?
Well, the people, for the most part, did not. Paul revealed that to them.
Okay.
Paul told them what their histories meant. The people didn't understand they were Israelites. And two generations after Paul, that knowledge seemed to be lost again. It didn't seem to stick.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's part of the prophesied blindness of Israel.
Yes.
The blindness wasn't supposed to be lifted until the 2,500 years of punishment was passed.
Right, right.
And that is why we have the Israel identity message today.
That's right. And that was fulfilled in 1776 A.D. with the founding of America.
Well, that was the beginning of the fulfillment,
Yes.
It wasn't the end of the fulfillment.
No. We began to understand. Now we're beginning to understand who we are again.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because that period of blindness was prophesied to be a part of that punishment.
Right, right. Okay. All right. So where do we go from here?
We see from Romans chapter 15 that when Paul wrote his epistles to the Romans, he had not yet been to Rome. Although chapter 16 of the epistle fully reveals that there were several Christian assemblies already established there.
Okay.
These people Paul addressed were not all Judeans in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them were people of Roman lineage who had already been converted to Christianity.
Uh-huh.
The main subjects of Paul's epistle, however, were clearly people of Roman lineage.
Okay.
The subjects of Romans chapter 1, chapter 2, they're Romans. You can't say they're quote-unquote Jews in Rome.
Right. Well, would it be correct to say that any congregation in Roman territory would be a combination of old-fashioned Israelites who forgot that they are Israelites plus Judean Israelites?
Well, right. Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
And let me say that the name of the pagan Roman god Jupiter.
Okay.
That is actually a contraction, and I could demonstrate that mainstream sources agree with me on this, of the Latin words Jove and Pater or Father.
Okay.
Okay. They called their god Jove Father.
Mm-hmm.
And Jove is the exact phonetic equivalent of the Hebrew word Yahweh.
Right.
Because J-O-V and E in
Yahweh.
Roman,
yes,
in Latin are all vowels.
Okay.
And it's Yahweh, possibly, or
yes.
Yahweh.
Exactly.
It's not Jove.
Right.
There was no J, and the V sound, when it began a syllable, was usually pronounced like a W.
Yes.
And in the middle, it was pronounced probably like a U.
Yeah, exactly. So the anglicized version of Yahweh is Jove.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
By Jove.
Yeah,
imagine
by
that.
Jove, by Yahweh.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Very good.
Okay. Romans 1:20.
Okay.
I'd like to read from 1:20 to 1:25.
Okay.
Namely, the unseen things of his from the creation of the order are clearly observed, being understood in the things made both of his eternal power and divinity. For this they are inexcusable, because knowing Yahweh, they thought of him not as God, nor were they thankful, but they became foolish in their reasonings and were darkened, their hearts void of understanding, alleging that to be wise they became fools.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the key here, and they changed the estimation of the incorruptible Yahweh into a resemblance of an image of corruptible man. And so he's not talking about Judeans.
Right.
He's talking about the so-called pagan Romans.
Right.
They had the truth of God.
Mm-hmm.
Only Israel had that.
That's right.
The Old Testament says again and again that Yahweh only revealed himself to the children of Israel.
Right.
And he revealed himself to Noah.
Right.
But we're talking about 2,000
yeah.
years later, or,
yeah.
or 1,800 years later anyway, and he only revealed himself to the children of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He let, as Paul says, every other nation go their way. And Paul says that in Acts chapter 17.
Right, and the Old Testament says numerous times, you only have I known above all the nations on the face of the earth.
So absolutely.
We can't be talking about anybody else except white Israelites.
That's Amos 3:2. You,
yeah.
you're the only family I've known in all the earth. And in Psalm, I think it's Psalm 146 or Psalm 147, where David said that he only revealed his statutes and his judgments to Israel.
That's right.
Period.
That's right.
That's Psalm 147.
Yes. Okay. So Paul was telling these people that they corrupted this. so he's talking primarily here to paganized Israelites, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And in Romans chapter 2, Paul explains that these Romans, by building a society based upon the rule of law, actually fulfilled the prophecy of Jeremiah that was told to Israel that he would write his law in their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that is what Paul is saying in Romans chapter 2.
Mm-hmm.
In Romans chapter 4, Paul tells the Romans that Abraham was their forefather. I know the King James Version says father,
mm-hmm.
but all of the ancient Greek manuscripts say forefather.
Okay.
And the ancient Greek manuscripts, the manuscripts before the 6th century, are unanimous in saying forefather.
Okay.
So obviously some ancient scribes didn't understand that.
That's right.
And dropped the letters P-R-O.
Yeah, right.
Which mean before, you know, which makes father into forefather.
Right, which indicates genealogy without any doubt.
Absolutely.
Yes.
A father can be spiritualized.
Yes.
But like a founding father.
Exactly.
But a forefather is
cannot.
A genetic father.
That's right. Cannot be spiritualized. Yes. Okay. So now, why do the Judeo-Christians not get any of this that you're describing right now?
Well, even when you confront them with it, they deny that it means what it says.
Yes.
They all deny that it means what it says.
Okay.
They'll twist the meaning of every word.
Mm-hmm.
And to understand it, Paul, I think it's in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, explains that he spoke in plain language.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he gives a whole analogy in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that if a trumpet has an uncertain sound,
mm-hmm.
who would know to go to war?
Yeah.
In other words, if what you're saying isn't what you're saying, how could you understand me?
That's right. Exactly.
Paul meant by his words exactly what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And he explains that.
Okay.
And the Judeo-Christians, the Christian Zionists, they can't
Zionist.
Understand that.
Right.
So rather than try to understand what the words say, they want to twist the words into what they understand.
Yeah, they make up a whole new theology. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
They have an invented entire theology.
Right.
Their entire theology, right from the ground, is contrived.
Yes.
And
it's, totally
and it's phony.
Yes.
It was probably first schemed out by rabbis.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't doubt.
Yes. Well, certainly the gospel that's coming from the televangelists and from the Schofield Bible, you know,
oh, that's absolutely the gospel of the Satan.
Yes, right.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's the gospel of Satan.
Yeah, it's Rothschild-financed Judeo-Christianity. That's what it is.
Every bit of it.
Yes, yes. And that it preaches that the Jews are the Israelites of the Old Testament and that that Paul is writing to non-Jews.
But
well, he was
Paul
writing
bashes,
to non-Jews,
Paul,
wasn't he?
If Paul's critics in identity had understood that the Romans were Trojans, or Zarajuda, and took a close look at this epistle, Paul cannot be faulted.
Okay,
Paul's
yes.
message is perfect.
That's right. That's
There's
right.
nothing that can be criticized here.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
In Romans chapter 5, Paul equates the word anthropos, which is man,
mm-hmm.
with Adam. So whenever Paul says anthropos, you cannot imagine that he means anything but
yeah.
Adam,
he
a damning man.
He certainly doesn't mean blacks and Australopithecans and
absolutely.
Amerindians.
And,
yes.
Yeah, Lucy.
Right, Lucy. yes.
Actually, there was a way to find it proves that the Lucy that they made such hay out of is actually an ape.
right.
But that they
no
had
doubt.
Only found a skull fragment.
No, well, we're supposedly all descended from apes, yes.
Well, all the Jews and the Negroes are descended
that's,
from apes.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
You know, that's true. Evolution is true. I wouldn't call it evolution. I would call mm-hmm. it... attaining a higher life form through miscegenation is really
right.
what it is.
Yeah, that's
that, that's
the best
really
they can
what it is.
Yeah.
And that is true for them,
mm-hmm.
but not
that's right.
for us.
That's right. Because we are, now this is one of the passages so misunderstood, we are born from above, not again.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So they got that one wrong, too.
okay. If Paul equates anthropos and Adam in Romans chapter 5, then wherever the word anthropos appears in Paul's writing,
mm-hmm.
one has to understand it by that. He means an Adam man.
Right.
And no one else.
That's
now,
right.
Paul, as the Paul bashers claim, wanted to pollute Christianity. We wouldn't have an epistle to the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
He would have went straight to Saudi Arabia, straight to Ethiopia, Egypt, Alexandria. There was a huge colony of Judeans in Alexandria in Paul's time.
Yes.
And he would have wrote epistles to the Egyptians and the Libyans and the Hottentots and all those people, the Nubians.
Right.
If he wanted to be a perverter of Christianity, he would have done that.
Right. Okay.
That
I'm
would
just,
only make sense.
Yeah, I'm just glancing at Romans 4:17 as it is written, I have made you a father of many nations. Of course, the Romans would be one of those nations.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But the Judeos teach that says, I have made,
mm-hmm.
they teach it backwards. They say, I have made many nations your children.
right. right. Right.
They don't teach it the way it's spoken.
That's right. That's
that
right.
Abraham would
logic.
Become a father of many nations.
Yes, yes. And now let's dwell on that for a second, because Abraham was by no means a Jew. He was certainly not a Judahite. And to suggest that Abraham was a Jew would be an anachronism. And so let's just quickly talk about who the children of Abraham are, and then how they figure into these gospels, these epistles. Okay, you get my question?
I get it, yes.
Yeah, so Abraham, he had, what, the five sons by Keturah?
Well, if Abraham was a Jew, why isn't Ishmael a Jew?
Right, exactly, because he's also a son of Abraham.
Why wasn't Midian a Jew?
Right, right. If all the descendants of Abraham are Jews, why aren't the Arabs Jews?
Absolutely.
Yes. So it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, the whole dichotomy falls apart once you examine the text and question what you're told.
Yeah, so obviously these Judeo-Christians don't read their Bibles. They simply accept Jewish interpretation without questioning it. And it doesn't make any sense with that way. It simply doesn't make any sense.
Time and again.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And so in verse 18, according to that which is spoken, so shall your seed be, talking about the seed of Abraham, and then Yahshua Messiah very clearly, as you pointed out earlier, says, ye are not my sheep.
And that word means offspring.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere it appears in the New Testament, the word seed means offspring.
That's right. And so Yahshua refused to try to even convert those people because they were not his sheep. It can't be any clearer that Jesus, Paul, Peter, and all the rest of them differentiated between their own kind and those who were not Israel.
All he did was reproach those people.
Yes.
He never attempted to convert them.
That's right.
In fact, he spoke in parables so that they wouldn't understand.
That's right. Exactly.
How could you say that you could convert one when he
yes.
refused to?
That's right.
And rejected them.
That's right. That's right. They cannot hear. They cannot understand what he says.
But in today's day and age, we have to understand that this is the power of the purse that has done this.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Now, any more from Romans, or do you want to move to another book?
Well, Romans 7, I'd like to mention that because Paul explains the entire marriage relationship between Yahweh and Israel in Romans 7. Now, if these Romans weren't Israelites,
yes.
why would he even mention that?
That's right.
Okay, in
That's
Romans
right.
9, Paul describes the entire the history of Judea. He sums up the history of intertestamental Judea by saying that not all of these people in Israel are Israel.
Right.
And even John in his epistle says they came from us, but they were not from of us.
Okay.
In 1 John.
Yes.
Meaning that they were among us, but they weren't ours.
Right.
They weren't really Israelites.
Right. Well,
okay.
Yeah. Well, here in verse 4, Romans 9, verse 4 is where the word adoption is used. And, of course, this is an illegitimate translation. Would you please explain what he's really saying here
okay.
in Romans 9, 4?
The word huiosesia means placement of a son, period.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the word means. Now, in the ancient world, you could place a son for adoption. People do it today. Young, unwed mothers do it all the time. But that doesn't describe that is the equivalent of putting a son up,
mm-hmm.
but it does not describe the act of adoption.
Right.
Because the placing of a son can be for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, the Greek word that was commonly used for adoption was eispoiesis, and that means a making into.
Okay.
Okay? You could be placed for a particular purpose, but it wasn't necessarily to be made into somebody else's son, which would only be described by the word eispoiesis, never by huiosesia.
Mm-hmm.
The actual context of the New Testament and the way huiosesia is used is the placing of a son into the position as an heir.
Right.
That's clear
right.
in Paul's epistles over and over again,
mm-hmm.
that we would be heirs. In
so
other
you,
words,
yes.
you do not attain the placement of a son. You're a child of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
All the children of Israel are children of Yahweh. Deuteronomy 14:1,
mm-hmm.
they're the only people Yahweh ever called his children.
Son. Right.
Okay?
Yes.
However, you don't personally attain your rightful status and position as a son until you accept the gospel in obedience.
Right, right.
That's
yeah.
the huiosesia that
right.
Paul is talking about.
Okay, and Paul confirms this in verse 7, in Isaac shall your seed be called. He's not talking to anybody else except the descendants of Isaac, right? And
Absolutely.
He's excluding everybody else. He says, the seed of Abraham, are they all children, but in Isaac shall your seed be called. So only the... Only the Saxons is the people he's talking about here, okay? Those who came through Sarah, all right? And then in verse 12, in verse 12 and 13, he excludes Esau.
Absolutely. And,
so,
and what Paul's saying here is that there are Israelites in Judea, his kinsmen according to the flesh,
mm-hmm.
and the covenants are theirs, and he cares about those people.
Mm-hmm.
And the covenants aren't only theirs. They belong to all Israelites.
Right.
But he's using this in contrast to the Edomites in Judea.
Right.
Paul's
right.
telling us that all of the people that rejected the gospel that he doesn't care about
mm-hmm.
are Edomites.
That's right.
And that's the same thing that Malachi said would happen.
Right.
It's the same thing that Ezekiel said would happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing that those people in John 8:33
yes.
attest to themselves
right.
that they were Abraham's seed, however,
mm-hmm.
they'd never been in bondage.
Right, right.
And John the Baptist yes. said that seed could be raised from stones to Abraham, and that's true. Mm-hmm. But they would not be children of the covenant.
That's right, right. And then he confirms this in verse 21, has not the potter power over the clay of the same lump to make one vessel to honor and another to dishonor? He's confirming the dishonor of the Edomites.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And this is directly correlated to the good and bad figs of Jeremiah.
Mm-hmm.
And there are good figs in Jerusalem and there are bad figs in Jerusalem.
Yes.
And the bad figs are so evil they can't be eaten.
Yes.
And the good figs are the children of the kingdom. And the two vessels from the same lump.
Yes.
Isaac is the lump. Jacob and Esau are his children. Esau was a race mixer, and he was cursed. He was cursed for that, and he was hated for that.
Yes, yes. Okay, very good. We have an exclusivist message, no doubt about it. It's segregationist, folks. Paul is a segregationist Israelite, and you can't interpret this any other way unless you distort it time and time again. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Romans chapter 11.
Okay.
Paul talks about the grafting in of the wild olive tree into the cultivated olive tree.
Okay.
Now, the branches that are broken off are the people, the real Judahites in Judea, who followed the Edomites and didn't believe the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Those branches would be broken off. They're going to be destroyed along with the Edomites in the Roman wars that Paul also tells us are coming in Romans chapter 16. Now, the grafting in of the branches, Paul never told that. Paul never explained that to the Galatians, and he never explained it to the Dorian Greeks. Instead, he told the Dorian Greeks in Corinth that all their fathers were baptized in the cloud and the sea with Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the difference here is that the Romans, their ancestors were not at Sinai. They left in the Egyptian dispersion before the Exodus. They were not at Sinai, so they are wild olives.
Mm-hmm.
Olives that never had the law, that were not governed by the laws at Mount Sinai. Their ancestors never had those laws.
Right.
They left from Egypt before those laws were implemented. So they had to be grafted in.
Right.
They were wild olives. But
right.
they were still olives.
Yeah.
They weren't apples. They weren't pears. They weren't
yes.
figs. They were olives.
They were whites.
And they sure as hell weren't bramble bushes.
That's right. Or Brer Rabbit and Brer Bear. Yeah. So, again, an exclusivist message by Paul, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. And anybody that thinks that they could graft themselves in because the Romans are grafted in,
mm-hmm.
well, they're just taking this out, totally out of context.
Right.
If you're not a Roman,
mm-hmm.
then this isn't addressed to you.
Yeah, just because you happen to live in the suburbs of Rome doesn't make you an Israelite.
And I would think that Paul went to Illyria, and those people also descended from the Trojans.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had Paul's epistle to the Illyrians, we'd probably find his message.
Yes, yes.
But it wasn't made to the Ephesians, the Galatians, the Philippians, or the Corinthians, because the ancestors of those people were with Moses in the Exodus. They
mm-hmm.
were Israelites who departed later.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And
Romans 16:20.
Okay.
This is Paul's own two-seed line prophecy.
Okay.
In Romans 16:20, in my translation, it says, "Now Yahweh of peace will crush the adversary, or Satan,
yes.
under your feet quickly."
Mm-hmm.
What we have here is twofold.
Mm-hmm.
First, it's a direct allusion to Genesis 3:15.
Yes.
And it also shows that Paul understood the 70 weeks prophecy of Daniel.
Okay.
And if that's properly read, it says that after the crucifixion, that the people of the prince, who are the people of Christ, meaning the Romans, would come to destroy Jerusalem.
Right.
Daniel 9:24-27.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, in order to make the statement that the Romans would crush the adversary or Satan under their feet shortly.
Yes.
Okay. Had to understand first that the Romans were the people of the prince of Daniel chapter 9. And second, that the adversary existed in Jerusalem,
right,
and they would be crushed as the serpent, the head of the serpent would be crushed in Genesis 3:15.
Right, right. Exactly, exactly. Okay, backing up to verse 19, for your obedience has come abroad to all men. The word men is added here in the King James because it's italicized. And maybe you could comment on, you know, first of all, obedience. Could this mean anything other than obedience to the law? Because the anti-Paulians claim that he teaches that the law has been abolished, but we should obey him.
Paul did not teach that the law has been abolished.
Okay.
Paul taught that Christians would not be judged by the law.
Right.
That we were granted favor.
And
that is a matter of prophecy.
Yes.
Jeremiah states over and Isaiah states, I will cleanse you of your sin.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to Israel. It excludes no Israelite. Those prophecies, you can go back and read those prophecies, and there's a good half dozen of them, exclude no Israelite. It says, I will cleanse them of their sins, period. And Paul explains to us that judgment is not by the law, because by the cross we're cleansed of our sins. We are granted favor or
mm-hmm.
grace. Now, that doesn't mean that we're disobedient. Paul explains over and over again, that's all the more reason why we should be obedient.
Yes.
In Romans chapter 3, 29,
right,
he says, nay, we establish the law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A Christian should want to be obedient.
Right.
Should want to follow the law.
Right.
And we know that we can't follow the letter of the law
mm-hmm.
because the body fails.
Right. What do you
However, we surely follow the spirit of the law and seek to keep it as well as we can.
Right. And elsewhere, Paul says, how could the world even be judged if there were no law, because there'd be no standard by which to judge?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Over and over again, Paul mm-hmm. upholds the teaching and the transmission and the keeping of the law.
Okay, so now we have some confusion of language here in the word all. And, of course, the word men is added. It was added by the King James translation.
Well, right. The message is to all Israel.
Yeah, all Israel. Exactly. So if the three musketeers say all for one and one for all, they're only talking about musketeers, right? They're not talking about everybody in the world.
Absolutely. It has to be taken in context.
It has to be taken in context. So all of these universalists who claim that Paul is teaching this is for everybody in the world and all races and blah, 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 they're simply taking all of this out of context.
Absolutely.
And
I don't know if I did it actually here or not, because I don't know exactly what verse you're in.
Oh, well, it's the same verse, 19. For your obedience has come abroad to all men. I'm glad, therefore, on your behalf, but yet I would have you wise to that which is good and simple concerning evil. And then verse 20, which you were just discussing about it being a confirmation of Genesis 3:15 and Daniel chapter 9.
Well, he said, I translate this, surely that of your compliance has reached to all.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I rejoice concerning you. Well, if he's talking about compliance, and we have clear records in the Old Testament that only Israel had the law.
Mm-hmm.
And we're told by Paul in Galatians chapter 4, for instance,
yes,
that only Israel was under the law.
Right.
Well, he's talking about compliance
yes.
with the law.
Yes.
So he can only mean all Israel.
That's right.
And only an idiot could read anything else into that.
That's right. That's right.
Because Psalm 147 clearly states that nobody else had the law.
Yes. Yes.
There's no context anywhere in the Old Testament or the New that anybody had the law besides the children of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So that all can't be inclusive of anybody but Israel.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, where do we go from here?
Well, I want to, in the context of Paul's identifying the people in Jerusalem as Satan,
okay,
in Romans 16:20, and this actually was fulfilled about 12 years after Paul wrote.
Okay.
Was Jerusalem destroyed by the Romans.
Okay, yes.
So this, if anybody says Paul was not a prophet, then they're a liar.
That's right.
Because
that's
this
right.
is Paul knew this. The Greek word prophet actually means an interpreter of the word of God.
Mm-hmm.
Paul interpreted it perfectly.
Yes.
He
yes.
knew that Jerusalem was about to be destroyed by Rome, and he knew it 12 years before it happened.
Right. Okay. Very good.
2 Thessalonians 3:2.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I want to go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2.
Right.
To show that Paul indeed knew that it was the adversary or Satan sitting on that on the seat of Moses in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
2 Thessalonians 2, verses 3 to 4, my translation.
Okay.
You should not be deceived by anyone in any way, because if apostasy had not come first and the man of lawlessness been revealed,
mm-hmm.
the son of destruction, and we see the vessels of destruction in Romans chapter 9.
Right.
He who is opposing and exalting himself above everything said to be a god or an object of worship.
And that's Talmudic Judaism, no doubt about it.
The Talmud says that the Jews are their own Messiah.
That's right.
So he is seated in the temple of Yahweh, representing himself that he is a god.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul is identifying the Edomites in Judea, the vessels of destruction, as Satan.
Yes.
They are Satan.
That's
they
right.
are the adversary.
Yes.
And Paul is teaching 2 seed line.
Yes.
Because he connects it in Romans 16:20 right back to Genesis 3:15.
Right.
Paul
yes.
is.
And he knows that the Edomites are in control of Judea. That's what he's telling us here.
Paul is the first 2 seed line pastor after Yahshua Christ.
Right. Right.
Because the other apostles didn't understand this.
Yeah, they didn't understand it. That's right. They were just historians of. You know, being walking with Christ and recording the events. Yeah,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And Yahshua, I believe, chose the simplest, most humble, honest men that he could for that purpose.
Right, right.
And they did a good job. They fulfilled their role.
And we're having the same difficulty today explaining this to the average Israelites of the world who have been infected with Judeo-Christianity. They don't want to believe it either.
You know, the scales will come off their eyes when Yahweh wants the scales to come off.
Yes. Yes, yes.
And we fight to have it done because I believe it's people like us. I mean, I'm not trying to set myself aside as special. Without me, this movement would still go forward, and it'd still be 100,000 people like us, and there are.
Yes.
To varying degrees.
Yes.
This message has lived yes. for 150
yes.
years since John Wilson basically and Sharon Turner and some other gentleman discovered it. And it's going to continue,
right.
but the scales aren't going to fall off the eyes of the masses until Yahweh wants the scales
right,
to fall
right.
off the eyes of the masses.
Okay, well,
I believe that he has his remnant that carries the message and keeps it, and we've gotten a lot better at it over 100 years,
yes.
and we've gotten to know it a lot more exactly,
mm-hmm,
but
yes.
it's not time to take the scales off the eyes of the masses yet.
Right, right. Okay, well, I tell you what, let's go... I don't think I've got it in me to go 3 hours today. Why don't we just set it at 2 hours and we can continue this next Saturday, okay? Because I'm sure you got more material.
Oh, I have a lot more material. I mean, if you want to, I hate to tell the people listening that we could cut it off now, but I mean.
Let's go another half an hour and make it a 2-hour show. And, let's continue because talking mainly about the exclusivist message and the 2 seed line, what about some antinomian, refutation while we're at it?
Well, I personally didn't prepare for that tonight.
Oh, you didn't? Okay,
well,
let's save that for next time then. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
The basis of this is based on my presentation I would have done in Binghamton.
Yes.
A lot more casually.
Yes.
But it's all about history and the identification of the people that Paul went to.
Yes.
Because to me, that's primary.
Yes.
Let's get over the fact that Paul went to Gentiles.
Yes.
Paul only went to dispersed Israelites.
Right. Yeah. And,
word, everybody he went to was a dispersed Israelite.
Right. And the word Gentile, that we haven't discussed it yet, because this is kind of an introductory. The intention is to give an introduction to Paul's exclusivism. That word Gentile, coming from the Latin gentilis, actually means kinsman. It does not mean non-Israelite, and so that. false dichotomy between Jew and Gentile, which the entire world believes in, is a Jewish invention. The fact is, the New Testament was written to the Israelites, and the Gentiles are, in fact, the dispersed Israelites.
Well, right. And yeah. there are other Latin terms
mm-hmm.
for people of other nations.
Yes.
And I really think, even though scholars don't know it today, that Jerome knew what he was doing when he took all of the possible Latin terms
mm-hmm.
and he used the term Gentilis.
Well, he meant kinsmen.
That's what I mean. He meant people who were of the same race is what he meant.
Right, right. So he's not at all making a dichotomy between Jews and non-Jews. What he's doing, he's equating Israelites with dispersed Israelites.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so because the Jews have falsely inserted these definitions, incorrect definitions, into Strong's Concordance and other places, the whole world has fallen for this gambit and simply think Jewish thoughts instead of Christian thoughts and Israelite thoughts. Yeah, I'm trying to find, I have a document. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a document where some scholars actually discuss the word Gentile and what it really means.
Well, Clifton Emmaheiser has it in his writing. He actually has a quote from a Latin handbook written in the 1950s.
Okay.
That spells it right out.
Okay.
I just don't have it handy.
Oh, okay. So it's really the dichotomy is between the Israelites of Judea versus the dispersed Israelites all over the place in the Mediterranean basin primarily, and others as well. But that's primarily where the Israelites were dispersed to.
Well, at the earliest times, yes.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and of course, by this time, they were the Germans, so the so-called barbarians.
Paul
the Brits.
Mentions the Scythians,
yes.
And by that he means the Germans.
Yes.
He mentions the Galatians. He mentions the people of Spain,
mm-hmm.
who were Phoenician Israelites.
Right.
And by his time, also some Celtic Israelites.
Yes, yes.
He mentions the Romans, and he addresses Greeks,
mm-hmm.
Dorian Greeks and Danan Greeks, the Macedonians.
Right.
They're all dispersed Israelites. And I think that's probably
okay.
And the Illyrians who are Trojan kinsmen of the Romans.
Right.
And also
right.
dispersed Israelites.
Right.
And he doesn't mention anybody else.
Yes. So Paul's epistles are addressed to Israelites and or Adamites who are obviously related to the Israelites, but are not necessarily Israelites.
Some of the people in Ephesus may have been Lydians or Phrygians.
Yes.
Some of the in part at least, some of the people in Macedonia or the cities that he went to just the other side of the agency, they may have been Thracians, but his only specific address to non-Israelites is Acts chapter 17
mm-hmm.
and the address to the Athenians on Mars Hill.
Okay. All right.
That's his only specific address to non-Israelites.
Yeah.
All those other people, he's primarily addressing Israelites.
Yeah.
And whether there were some Ionians or Thracians in the Japheth shall dwell in the house, in the tents of Shem.
Right.
That's a prophecy. And the Japhethites are as white as the Shemites, or Yahweh certainly wouldn't have allowed that.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
it's clear to me it doesn't matter if there's a Japhethite at my dinner table with all of the Israelites.
Yes.
He's a white man. He's an Adamite.
Yeah.
And he who's to say he doesn't belong there?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly, because the Adamites, though Adamites are to be grafted back in once the kingdom comes.
Well, the first message of salvation through the tree of life
mm-hmm.
is Genesis 3:22,
yeah,
and that was given 3,000 years before the call of Abraham.
Right, right. Yeah, so ultimately we're doing this for all Adamites, even though many Adamites don't appreciate it.
Well, yes, but I would, today we cannot tell apart a Japhethite from an Israelite, and I
mm-hmm.
would like to make that clear
okay.
that we can't imagine that any non-white or marginally white or kind of maybe white person
right.
is a true Adamite.
Right.
And that just doesn't, I mean, that's
yeah.
just not
well,
correct.
Yeah, I've found that by and large, in fact, more than by, it's actually large, that the people that I have associated with in the identity movement, very few of them, if they have non-Israelite blood, are interested in this movement. They're just not, you know.
Well, that's very true.
This is the call.
They're not interested, or they sit and argue with you.
Right, exactly.
And the arguments are vain.
Yes, yeah, and then you can tell right away if they're really interested in identity, they'll know the Bible, and if they're not real Israelites, they really aren't interested in the Bible, and then they talk a lot of gibberish, you know.
And I've proven that out in my own conversations many, many times.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And often I engaged in vain conversation just to prove it again.
Right.
We need to be reminded once in a while.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
I would like to start with 1 Corinthians.
Okay.
It has to be noted that the 1 Corinthians which we have in our Bibles is not Paul's first epistle to the Corinthians.
Okay.
That was apparently lost.
Oh, okay.
In 1 Corinthians, in what we know as 1 Corinthians 5:9,
mm-hmm.
Paul states, I had written to you in a letter
yes.
not to associate with fornicators.
Right. Now, wait a minute. He says the law has been abolished, so why should you bother?
Absolutely.
Avoid fornicators.
By fornicators, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul proves that he means race mixers.
Right.
However, it's clear from 1 Corinthians 5:9 that there was a 1
yeah.
Corinthians before 1 Corinthians, but we don't have it anymore.
Right. Okay, and then if there's no law, then why should we bother avoiding these people?
Well,
you know,
absolutely.
Silly. Yes.
And it's not, he doesn't tell them not to commit fornication.
Mm-hmm.
He does in chapter 10.
Right.
Not even to associate with fornicators.
Right.
So all these... this cramming of homosexual deviance down our throats.
Yes.
It's anti-Christian.
That's right. And it's anti-Paul.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
The Dorian Greeks were Israelites.
Uh-huh.
The Corinthians were Dorian Greeks, which can be established by all the Greek histories.
Okay.
A Dorian Greek king had written to the high priest at Jerusalem sometime around 160 B.C., stating explicitly that the Dorians knew that they were of the seed of Abraham
mm-hmm.
and kin to the Judeans.
Right.
This letter is recorded by the historian Flavius Josephus, and a reply to it from Jerusalem to the Dorians is also recorded by both Josephus and in the first book of the Maccabees.
Okay.
It is my argument that the Dorians began settling in Crete from Dor in Palestine sometime shortly before the Trojan War.
Okay.
Homer mentions them as being there in his Iliad, but nowhere else.
Okay.
So the so-called, it can be established that so-called Corinthian architecture has been found at Dor and elsewhere on the coast of Palestine.
Okay.
Which predates the Assyrian destruction of Israel.
Right, right. Okay.
A couple of generations after the Trojan War, the Dorians invaded the Peloponnesus in Greece and either drove off or enslaved
mm-hmm.
most of the Danans who dwelt there up to that point.
Okay.
They didn't conquer Thebes, and there were people around Sparta that the Spartans called the Perioikos or the Perioikoi,
mm-hmm.
and that just means those who dwell about.
Okay.
And they were the Danans or the Pelagians, the pre-Danan inhabitants of Greece, who were also Adamites and very possibly Hebrews.
Right. Okay.
And in fact, all of the Greek stories say that when the Danans came to the Peloponnesus after they fled from Egypt, because the stories state that the Danans fled from Egypt, that the original inhabitants, the Pelagians, embraced them.
Mm-hmm.
They accepted them with no problem.
Right. So they realized that they were kinsmen. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done so.
I believe so.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the Dorian invasion of the Peloponnese must have happened about 1100 B.C.
Okay.
Or 50 years before Saul became the king in Israel.
Uh-huh.
The principal city of the Dorians all throughout their history was Sparta.
Mm-hmm.
But Corinth was a major Dorian metropolis in the north of the Peloponnese.
Okay.
And that's my background on
okay. The
epistles to the Corinthians.
So
if you don't understand that history,
right,
you're not going to understand Paul's epistles to the Corinthians.
Right. So the Spartans were, in fact, Israelites who left before the Assyrian captivity. So they're in between the Egyptian dispersion and the Assyrian dispersion.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And there were many Israelites, who, like the Carthaginians, who left Israel during the kingdom, the Judges period and the kingdom period.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't stay. As you look at the census numbers, you'll know from David's census
mm-hmm.
that many people must have been leaving because the population basically ceased to grow.
Yes.
Any contained land, and ancient Israel is contained not as much. I mean, David had a pretty powerful kingdom, and so did Solomon. They weren't contained as much by the surrounding peoples as they were
mm-hmm.
by the simple geography.
Right.
I mean, Arabia is a desert.
Right. Right.
And people had to actually, the land will only support so many people.
Right.
So
right.
people have to leave the land in order to survive.
Well, that's why apparently the Kenites settled in Canaan land, the land of milk and honey, because it was one of the most fruitful areas around there, because it's on the western edge of the Arabian Desert, okay? And I suppose you can say that Mesopotamia curled over the Arabian Desert toward Palestine.
Right,
okay?
And that's why it's called the Fertile Crescent.
The Fertile Crescent, yes. And then Yahweh instructed our ancestors, the Israelites, to exterminate those Kenites, but our ancestors failed to do so, and they are today pricks in our eyes and thorns in our sides because
of
that.
We call them Jews. So
yes,
some of them are actually Palestinian Arabs.
Exactly. Yeah, right. But the Jews who practice Judaism and the Talmud and all this Zionism and everything else, these are, in fact, the children of Satan, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. And I think a great deal of that stock also comes from east of the Tigris.
Okay.
That a lot of them had traveled east of the Tigris.
Okay. Okay. So Paul is, by excluding the Edomites and by telling us that he understands that Jerusalem would be destroyed by the Roman Israelites, thereby putting the Edomites temporarily out of business, is a fulfillment of the crushing of Satan's head, although we still have to do the job. We still have to finish the job.
Well, absolutely.
Go ahead.
The Jews were severely reduced at that time.
That's right.
But their population has grown. I mean, there's a lot more Jews in this country than the Jews admit.
That's right.
That they claim to be only 3% of the population.
Right.
But they're everywhere.
Yeah.
They can't possibly be only 3%. Maybe only 3% of the population go to synagogue.
Right.
But maybe 15% of the population are Jews.
Right. Or
a lot
sympathizers.
More Jews than they care to admit.
Yeah. Or they practice Judaism by default.
Well, right. But they've also, you know, the Khazars and the Khazars that have Jewish blood, it's marginal.
Yeah.
It might be an eighth or a 16th or a 32nd or whatever. And it's there, even though they act like Jews, they're not really religious practicing Jews.
No, but their culture is Jewish. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
And many of them are worse than Orthodox religious Jews. Yes, yes. Okay, well, we have about 10 minutes left. Where else do you want to go?
I don't know if we could really get into the epistle to the Corinthians as much as I had hoped to.
Okay.
But I would like to say that in the book of Acts, as recorded in chapter 18, verses 9 and 10,
okay,
it says, and this is this is the King James, it looks like, because it uses the word spake.
Yes.
Then spake the Lord, this is the King James. Then spoke Yahweh to Paul in the night by a vision, be not afraid, but hold not thy peace,
mm-hmm.
for I am with thee, and no man shall set on thee to hurt thee, for I have much people in this city,
okay.
meaning Corinth. And
right.
he wasn't talking about Jews.
Right.
He was talking about Corinthians.
Yes.
In other words, there's a lot of good people in this city, and they're going to stick up, but they ain't going to let you get hurt.
Yeah, there's Israelites in this city. Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who the Dorians, that's who they were.
That's right.
The that's the, you know, the setup for the discussion of the Corinthians. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 4 to 6,
mm-hmm.
in my translation, I thank my God at all times concerning you, in reference to the favor of Yahweh that is being given to you among the number of Christ Yahshua,
mm-hmm.
seeing that in all
yes.
you have been enriched in him in all thought and all knowledge, just as the proof of the anointed has been confirmed in you.
Mm-hmm.
The proof of the anointed
yes.
isn't the proof of Christ.
Yes.
It's that his sheep would hear his voice.
Right.
That the children of Israel would accept the gospel
mm-hmm.
as foretold in the prophets. There are Old Testament prophecies that allude to this very thing. Yahweh says, I will walk with them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. This prophecy is fulfilled in Yahshua Christ.
Right.
That
right.
the dispersed children of Israel would become
yes.
Christians is clear all throughout the prophecies.
Right.
And that's why Paul calls this, their acceptance of the gospel, Paul calls the proof of the anointed.
Yes. Okay, very good.
Without doubt.
Yes. I want to go back to Acts chapter 18, right after the verses you quoted, verses 11 through 13, let's say. Yeah, 11 through 13. Let me read them from the King James. And he continued there a year and 6 months teaching the word of God among them. And when Gallio was the deputy of Achaia, the Jews, now here the Jews would be correctly, the correct word because.
Well, I know we like to use the word Jew as the of the disbelieving Judeans.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a, that's revisionist in a way, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, yes. I would rather translate it Judeans everywhere.
Right, right. But I think we're talking about the Jews who were trying to maintain the traditions of men, contrary to, you know, the law of Moses. But here, let me read through verse 13. The Jews made insurrection with one accord against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat, saying, this fellow persuades men to worship God contrary to the law. Well, of course, whose law?
Absolutely. It's the Edomite law.
The Edomite law, the scribes and Pharisees. That's who would, these Jews would be.
Absolutely, but
yes.
Yahshua proved to these people again and again that they claimed to know the scripture, but they didn't.
That's right. They made it up.
And, you know, it's the same paradigm exists today in the Judeo-Christians.
That's right.
They claim to know the scripture, but they really don't know it at all.
That's right. That's right. Well, it brings up, in fact, the first thing that I was planning on saying last Saturday was to answer a general question by a lady who had just logged into my website and wrote me a really nasty email saying, you know, how can you possibly say that Judeo-Christianity is as bad as you're saying it is, as distorted? What value are the scriptures if everything has been distorted as badly as you say? And my response to her in the email was, you know, I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. You know, everything that Judeo-Christians teach, with the possible exception that they believe in Jesus Christ, whatever that means for them, it's all wrong. They haven't got anything right. So her basic question to me was, well, how do we get the truth out of this book if everything has been so badly distorted? And so, you know, how would you answer that question?
Well, I would answer that question by saying that they have to read the text that's in between Matthew 5 and John 3.
Yeah.
Okay. They read Matthew 5 and they skip to John 3:16.
Yes.
And they close the book.
Right. Right.
They don't read the rest of it.
Yeah, and they take everything else out of context.
Well, right. When they do read anything in between those chats, they'll read a line here and a line there, and they'll say, see, that's what it says. Well,
right.
What does the rest of it say?
Right, right. Yeah, and the conversation we had at the dinner table after we were kicked out of the American Legion Hall, you were saying, well, they snatch a verse here, and they snatch a verse there, and they snatch a verse from here, and then they put them all together, and you got a, we have the Bible.
And that's what they do.
It's snatchianity.
And they assume that the rest of the book agrees with their narrow interpretation
and
of those verses.
And it's
their out-of-context interpretation
right.
with those verses.
And it's extremely narrow. And so, it's as hard as it is to believe, the simple fact is, that modern Judeo-Christianity does not teach the whole truth. They take so much stuff out of context and invent so much that isn't in there at all, and then they call it Christianity.
Right. And that's why Catholicism, they love to promote the virgin and the child.
Because
they don't want to hear the words of Christ.
That's right.
As a grown man.
That's right. That's right. Yes, yes. Okay, well, I think we've done a really good job of introducing the, at least for today, the exclusivity message of Paul, that in fact it is a major message of the Pauline epistles, and it's not hard to find if you're actually reading these books instead of just focusing on the snatches that the Judeo-Christians make a new religion out of.
Well, it gets a lot more exclusive than this.
Yes, yes. So
wait until I read my translation of I think it's Colossians 1:23. No.
Okay.
Actually, I'm sorry. I forget where it is.
Yeah. Well, we'll save it for next Saturday night, okay? So, let's make this a two-part discussion, and we'll call it the, introduction to Pauline exclusivism. Okay.
Right, it's Philippians 2:14-16. I was thinking of.
Okay. And so the entire introduction will be a 4-hour introduction. And next week we'll get into the so-called antinomianism of Paul as well. Okay.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Okay. All right.
Praise
thanks,
Yahweh.
Joe. Praise Yahweh, and
thanks
to all for being in the chat room. And I had to kick that black guy out of the chat room about 50 times. Because he kept on dialing in. I have no control over that, folks. He can dial in, and because otherwise I either exclude everybody or include everybody.
Well, there's a way to do it.
There is?
You just have to develop the technique.
Yeah, maybe you can explain so the guy can't keep calling back in,
Well, you have to actually watch and detect when it's him. And
oh, yeah, well, that's what I was doing. I bumped him out at least a dozen times, if not more, So if you can figure out a way to keep people like that from logging in, that'd be great. I don't know if there's a way. But in any case, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll do this again next Saturday night, part two of this discussion of the exclusivity of Paul. And tomorrow my guest will be Greg Howard, and that'll be at noon. We'll be talking about his presentation that he was planning giving last Saturday as well. Okay, thanks a lot, Bill, and Yahweh bless everybody.
Take care.